your plans were secret when you left your office last night and you closed the door behind you. Were you walking in your sleep or were you just too tired to notice all the watchful eyes upon you?
Tom Esther. And this is Terrible Tommy, Tom Esker, here in the heartland, in the bunker, right here in north central Indiana, transmitting to the world. Tommy, yeah, it's May the 30th, 2017. Got that straight today. How about that? And it's an overcast day where I'm at. Don't get very many of them around here. Cool. Got the sea breeze. Want to warn you ahead of time, I'm going to change this P.O. box because I don't like this private post office deal. I'm going back to the U.S. Post Office, and so I'll let you have the box number probably on tomorrow's show. I see that lovable Tiger Woods got popped with a DUI, and he tried to say he was on his medicine. Yeah, that was his medicine. He's not doing too good since he gave that blonde a hard time over there. She took him to the cleaners. Well, ever since Tiger Woods' now ex-wife Alan Nordegren beat his ass with a 9-iron back in 2009. Nothing's gone right for the once unstoppable golf star. Since the breakup, Woods has exposed as a serial cheater, and the fallout led to several dropped endorsements and millions in lost revenue. In 2013, Woods had a brief stint as a dominant golfer he once was, snagging the number one spot for the most of that year, but subsequently back surgery slowed him down. Now the famous Kla Kablazian has hit a new low, being arrested for a DUI Monday morning. According to WPTV, Woods was arrested around 3 a.m. for driving under the influence in Jupiter, Florida. Woods apparently lives in Jupiter, Florida, which is odd or fitting, as most Florida is a giant suckhole full of weirdness. Sorry, Florida, but that's true. Palm Beach County jail records indicate Woods was released from custody at 10:50 a.m. this morning, or yesterday morning. WPTV reports that while I don't want to pass judgment on the former golf great, he totally looks wasted in his mugshot. Poor Woods. Ever since that wife of his beat him with a 9-club. Here's a couple of comments from the black side of town on Tiger Woods. Let the club Kablazians and the white women they love help their people. I'm feeling this is not my problem. And then the next one says, this guy was my idol for years. I even overlooked the cheating and divorce stuff because it was personal. And he got lambasted in the media for it. I've been pining for his return to the professional golf once he got off his back and got his back figured out. But alas, I feel I can't go on holding his torch. DUI is fucking stupid. And a guy with his money should be able to have a driver or call a cab. Get your head out of your ass, Tiger. Well, guess what, boys and girls? Amnesty International, which I don't have the greatest trust in, but they have confirmed that the U.S. Army gave ISIS $1 billion worth of arms and equipment in Iraq during President Obama's final year in office, according to the report. Talk about treason. And Israel loves ISIS. ISIS is tearing the shit out of all the countries around Israel, knocking off their leaders and everything else, while Israel sits back and chuckles with glee. This data was obtained by the human rights group following a Freedom of Information request for a 2016 government audit. How about that? This audit provides a worrying insight into the U.S. Army's flawed and potentially dangerous system of controlling millions of dollars worth of arms transfers to a hugely volatile region. It makes for especially sobering reading given the long history of leakage of U.S. arms to multiple armed groups committing atrocities in Iraq, including the armed group calling itself Islamic State. In 2015, the U.S. gave $1.57 billion worth of equipment to Iraq to help them fight ISIS through the Iraq Train and Equipment Fund. Now it's been revealed that they also funded the enemy, providing them with weapons. The Army's First Theater Sustainment Command, quote, did not have an accurate up-to-date record on the quantity and locations of Iraq Train and Equipment Fund equipment on the hand in Kuwait and Iraq, the Pentagon's Inspector General wrote in an audit. Are we crazy? Yes, we're crazy. Tens of thousands of assault rifles, hundreds of mortar rounds, and armored Humvees were among the equipment given to ISIS in Iraq, Amnesty said. According to Amnesty, the U.S. Army's lack of control over its weapons was also exposed in a 2015 audit. The 2015 audit prompted Congress to commit to keeping a stricter control of its weapons. Ha, 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 ha. You think this is an accident? You think all this bullshit is an accident? It's a very well contrived method of bleeding the United States taxpayers, working class people, and so forth. It's not an accident. It's bolstering Israel's control in the Middle East, tearing down leadership in the Middle East, and giving that leadership to phony leaders that are going to kowtow to the World Bank and so forth. That's what it is. Hawaii Representative Gabbard went to Syria on a secret fact-finding mission to wade through the lies and propaganda to find out what is really happening on the ground. Immediately on her return, CNN booked her for an exclusive interview, and Gabbard told them exactly what they didn't want to hear. She has proof the Obama administration and Hillary was funding ISIS and the Al-Qaeda. The bottom line on all this stuff is they're bombing the hell out of the Middle East and chasing people and making population change into Europe to destroy Europe, and Europe is going to be totally overrun and through unless there's a major upheaval against these people. I don't mean at the bowls. I mean you're going to have to grab them by the neck and throw them out. I'm talking about the leaders. Explaining to Jake Tapper that she met people from all walks of life in Aleppo and Damascus, Gabbard said the Syrians, quote, expressed happiness and joy at seeing an American walking their streets. But they also wanted to know why it is that the United States, its allies, and other countries are providing support, are providing arms to terrorist groups like al-Nusra, al-Qaeda, ISIS, who are on the ground there raping, kidnapping, torturing, and killing Syrian people. Oh, it's a well-thought-out plan. It's a massive plan to flood Europe with Middle Eastern people, whether they like it or not. In other words, they're herding world populations all over the place. They're reforming the whole world. And the only way you can deal with people like that is, you know how. Quote, they asked me, why is the United States supporting these terrorist groups, guerrilla groups, who are destroying Syria, when it was al-Qaeda who attacked the United States in 9/11, not Syria? Quote, I didn't have an answer for that, unquote. That was more than Jake Tapper, who was hostile from the beginning of the interview, could handle. His face screwed up. Tapper lashed out, saying, obviously, United States government denies providing any sort of help to the terrorist groups you are talking about. What a goddamn liar he is. They say they provide help for the rebel groups. Rebel groups, unquote. If that was supposed to be Tapper's knockout blow, Gabbard saw it coming a mile away. Without missing a beat, she calmly deconstructed his ideological, savagely wrong talking points. Quote, the reality is, Jake, that I'm glad you brought that up. Every place I went, every person I spoke to, I asked this question to them, and without hesitation, they said, there are no moderate rebels. Who are these moderate rebels that people keep speaking of? Quote, regardless of the name of these groups, the strongest fighting force on the ground in Syria is al-Nusra, or al-Qaeda, and ISIS. That is a fact. There are a number of different other groups, all of them fighting alongside, with or under the command of the strongest group on the ground that is trying to destroy and overthrow Assad, just like they did in Libya. Quiet, boys and girls, your government is your worst enemy. It is absolutely your deadly enemy. It's destroying your race. It's destroying countries all over the world and other races too. There has to be an upheaval of the people across the world against all this crap. This has become the most corrupt, one of the most corrupt, if not the most corrupt, because it spends the most money, government in the world. Now ask Trump one thing, how they're talking about taking money away from working people that are in bad shape or can't get health care, why don't they ask him how come he's putting all his eggs in one basket by producing more and more weapons? Not washing machines, not TVs, not cars, more weapons. And why doesn't he take the troops out of, say, Germany? Remove all the American troops from Germany. Think of what that cost us since the Second World War and countries all around the world. Oh, we got to have them to protect America. Bullshit. Boys and girls, if you're still in the right wing and you're eating up all this horse shit from the right wing and these guys on top, better get out. You better get out because you're on the wrong side. You're not on the white side. Hey, has anybody out there bought one of these frog TV cable things? It's not the cable, but you can get everything for free after you buy the box. I guess the minimum price for the box is $79.94. But once you got that, supposedly you can get everything going. Anybody got one of those yet? Well, I checked with Fact Check, and evidently this TV frog is not all it's cracked up to be, so I'd be a little careful about getting into it. Remember Manuel Ortega? How he got shafted by Daddy Bush? He worked for Daddy Bush, served him well, the whole bit. The minute Bush decided he was not an asset, they closed him down and pretty much killed him over a long haul. So he just died at 83, which proves to you, do not make deals with the U.S. government. You're going to get screwed in the end, to speak funny. Anytime these guys make deals with not only dictators, but anybody, they better have a lot of money and then gold and hidden out in some other country, someplace where they can hide, because the U.S. government, State Department, will turn on them every time on the least little thing. You know, not long ago, Nancy Pelosi's son, the minority leader, Jonathan, was booked in the Orange County jail on charges he murdered his daughter's boyfriend's stepfather during a dispute over a rule in a Little League baseball game. Jonathan, 42, believed that a tie went to the runner when Stephen Alberts, 31, told him that there was no tie. The umpire used his own judgment. Well, anyhow, that's a false story. The internet's full of false stories, even though I can't stand and actually despise Nancy Pelosi, but her son didn't murder anybody. No wonder our white forces get bad press. Disclaimer: America's Last Line of Defense is a satirical publication that uses the imagination of liberals and progressives to expose extreme bigotry and hate and subsequent blind gullibility that festers in right-wing nut jobs. Well, I know that's true. We present fiction as fact, and our sources don't actually exist. Names that represent actual people and places are purely coincidental, and all images should be considered altered and do not in any way depict reality. In other words, if you believe this crap, you're a real dumbass. Not what I'm saying, but this stuff is all over the web. The reason for all this is because on both sides, whether it's right or left wing, they're so anxious to hear bad shit about the other side, they'll believe anything. And believe me, the right wing is worse, probably, than the left wing. I don't know. They're about equal, I guess. The right wing racial people, too, do the same thing. They want to believe everything's so bad on the left that they'll believe about anything. So you better fact check before you start repeating stuff. I've probably put out stuff that was from these crazy people too. If you want to have some fun, call up your congressman or your senators and ask them, how come you don't bring the troops home from Germany? That's billions and billions of dollars we've spent over there. That would help situation and build the infrastructure. One thing I'm finding while watching China TV is on the cable now. China's pouring massive amounts of money into the infrastructure of African nations, getting them on their side. And that, while we're down there bombing the shit out of people, so you can damn Red China or China all you want, but they are using a smart method of getting people on their side down there in Africa. And if you've got the cable, and you may have this channel on your cable, a lot of interesting stuff on there. China's even down there in Zimbabwe pouring lots of money and infrastructure into Zimbabwe, which is going to pay off for them. There's a scam they're using on old Christians, especially old Christians. This scam occurred earlier this month when a woman stopped and asked Edge for directions at the corner of Nostrand and Church Avenues in Brooklyn. In the middle of the conversation, the woman revealed that she was from South Africa and had just inherited a lot of money and she was not able to take home. Quote, she shows three letters, one from a high priest and one from three lawyers. She cannot take back the money to South Africa because the government will confiscate it. The woman pleaded for this woman to help donate the money. The woman then stopped another man walking by who was dressed as a pastor. Christian scam again. Again, the supposed terrorist recited her story and the pastor offered to donate the money for her. And to prove that he would not steal it, enlisted this woman's help. Quote, the man with the Bible in his hand who said he's pastor and he's going to help, that's what caused me to trust the pastor, this gal said. So the pastor and the heiress drove Edge to 31st Street, where the pastor exited the vehicle and returned with a bag of his own money to prove that he could be trusted. He then drove the woman to the other woman's house so that she could do the same. From 26 years I came to this country, I started saving that money. 26 years. This woman said. And I went down there and I showed it to them and said, this is my money. If you leave the money with me, I will give it to St. Jude. Unquote. The woman handed over her life savings, which she kept rolled up in a sock as she hadn't had a green card and therefore was unable to put her cash in the bank. The 65-year-old handed her money over and the pair claiming they wanted to bless the money. Quote, she put it in the black handkerchief and she wrapped it up and that is where the money got switched, the woman said. When the Edge went home and opened up the bag, she found only pieces of newspaper and alleged the pastor and heiress were gone. And now the woman who has worked for this all her life has left nothing. Sounds like the U.S. government. Quote, I'm willing to work to pay my bills, but who's going to give me a job, she said.
Herself a faithful person with a good heart, but she is now consumed with fear and anger after losing her life savings, $28,000 in cash, we'll explain that in a moment, to a pair of scam artists she met on the street earlier this month in East Flatbush, Brooklyn.
I'm hung at myself, most of all, at myself. Not even like at them, because I was the one who even handed over my money.
It is a complicated story, so bear with us. The first scammer, a woman, approached, or should we say targeted Dorothy, with a story about an expiring visa and the need to immediately return to her native South Africa. She then told Dorothy she wanted to donate $100,000 from a large inheritance, but she could not take the money back with her to South Africa, so she wanted Dorothy to donate it to a charity on her behalf. But the woman wanted to be sure Dorothy had money of her own.
They said that I should show them that I won't use the money for any other reason, that I have my own money.
As they were talking, a priest just happened to walk by.
That's what did it for me, because he has a Bible in his hand. And he says he's a pastor of a church and he can't help.
You guessed it. The priest was in on the scam. He volunteered to join Dorothy and donate the South African woman's money on her behalf. The priest produced his own wad of cash, again, as proof of his good intentions, that he had no reason to steal the woman's inheritance. Now it was Dorothy's turn to prove she had her own money and no interest in ripping anyone off. But this is the part where the woman and the priest double-crossed Dorothy. She went up to her apartment and retrieved $28,000 in cash she kept rolled up in a sock, her life savings.
I came up here without a green card, 26 years, and there were a lot of years I could not put any money in the bank.
Then came the bait and switch. Dorothy never saw it coming.
How did they get the money out of your hands? Did you hand it to them?
Yes, definitely.
Why? Did they ask for it?
Yes.
Why?
So they want you want to bless it. Have they put it in a black handkerchief. And all of us, we all put your hand on it like that. And he put it and she says she's blessing it. Yes, I might have taken my eyes from it. I don't know when they switch it. Honestly, I don't know.
So when the blessing was over,
she put
happened?
It in a pouch.
She put the handkerchief in a pouch?
In a pouch, yes.
And then they handed it back to you?
And then handed it back to me. I went into the lobby and I took it out of my bag and I realized that it was locked.
And where were they?
They were gone.
The two scammers made off with Dorothy's life savings and left this 65-year-old retired nanny with a bag filled with newspaper clippings and an uncertain future.
I'm willing to work, to pay my bills so I could live. But who's going to give him a job?
Now, before you say she was a black woman, let me tell you, this kind of stuff is pulled... Just a minute. This kind of stuff is pulled on white people all the time. And so you people out there, you should be warning all your senior citizen friends and parents and grandparents or whatever that there's hundreds of scams floating around the country now. Now, it's interesting that it was black scammers that scammed this black woman. And I tell you, you don't have to be old to fall into this trap, because I remember when I was 19 or 20 in the army over in Frankfurt, Germany, I nearly got scammed that way on a money trade situation. And it was a similar deal. In my case, I chased the guy for 10... Well, not 10 blocks, 5 blocks I chased the guy because I figured it out pretty quick. And I got a hold of him and I threatened to beat his brains in if he didn't give me my money back, which he did. But I very nearly lost my pay. Yeah. Now, many of these things, though, are based on the Christian religion. They use that as a cover. Well, not only the big churches use scams too. The Jesus is a scam, the biggest scam. But you got to watch it and warn people you like and love and people who are your relatives. Do not get involved with any of these kind of scams over the telephone or over the internet. I see there's a little consternation among the right-wing racists. Somebody has put up a piece of music, Day of the Sword, up on Stormfront, and somebody's all upset about that because at some point it advocates violence against the police. Well, there's times when violence against the police is called for. You're not supposed to have to take everything from the police. As long as the police go by their own rules and the law and are trying to keep the peace, I see no problem interfering with them. But I agree with the blacks in the case, if the police go overboard, you have every right to use violence against them. I don't suggest it except in emergency situations. But believe me, as time goes on, the police are going to get more and more repressive in this country. And all this support your local police like we used to push back in the 70s with the John Birch Society, I've had some problems with the police in my day, and believe me, you can't trust cops, especially in court. They lie all the time. So somebody said on a little letter here that's on the internet, "Good morning, sir. I don't know if I'd interpret those song lyrics that way, but I'll have a word with Klarn, whoever that is, and suggest he take down the video, thanking you for bringing it to staff's attention." Well, I don't think you should take it down, but that's not my business, because that's the right wing. But if it says something about violence against the police in Day of the Sword, I'd leave it in there, because there's some times when it's called for. The objection appears to come from someone called the United Dixie White Knights. We are the Klan. Evidently, cops can do no wrong with that group. What's funny about it is the cops are always pushing the Klan around, herding them around, and doing everything they can to screw them. So why should you be so pro-cop? Don't make any sense. The cops are going to get more militant and more violent as they come back more and more from overseas in the Middle East, because they're taught to kill, taught to hate, taught to kick doors in, everything else. So they're going to bring it back here, and that's one of the first sources of employment for an ex-soldier, is be a cop. This is where the right wing and even the white racial end of the wing kiss the ass of the establishment. Now, why is that? Why are white working people still involving themselves in the right wing when most of their leadership kisses the ass of the system leaders? Something wrong there, and you better figure it out before it's too late. Dear Mr. Metzger, I just wanted to write and say thank you. I am just a proud white racialist that does what he is able to do to lend a hand to the brethren and live the best example I am able, and I thought it would be good to drop you a line in a positive, natural way, as I am sure you receive many in the other direction. I have followed and read and listened to your words since back before John was on Geraldo. Yes, sir, I am not a young man, young gun any longer, but wanted to thank you for staying the course and continuing to set the example, even during your truly rough periods. I have spoken at events off and on, but never to your crowds, but trying to spread the word to the lost and the young. I have also made sure I wrote at times to your POWs, including Mr. Lane, before he went to Valhalla. Well, this young man wanted me to listen to a 10-minute speech that he gave in Rome, Georgia. Unfortunately, I was not able to download it. I'll try to download it later. Let me see here. I'll try it one more time. I tried to check that out, but that whole thing at Rome, Georgia, was just another rerun of what I've been through for 40 years. All kinds of bravado and dress-up and costumes and so forth, but unfortunately, it doesn't scare anybody. And very few people respect it either, especially other white people. So you got to have a new method. You have to change your ways, boys and girls. But I'm afraid you won't. There's always going to be this right-wing dress-up stuff. It's going to keep going on and on. It doesn't do any good for the white race. Most of the people that brag about how they're defending and doing all this stuff aren't doing anything. And if they do something, they're going to be in the slammer in 5 seconds. So you better learn to do it quietly and secretly if you're going to do it. Lone wolf. You know, the Israelis go on and on about the 6-day war. But that was the biggest con job in a long time, because they claimed that Nasser's forces, the Egyptian forces, attacked Israel. And that's the biggest lie. One of the big lies of the Jews, among the thousands of lies of the Jews, that Nasser's forces did not attack Israel. Israel attacked the Egyptian forces of Nasser. Don't let anybody give you the opposite story, because it's a lie. Not only did the United States and the State Department support the attacking of Egypt's forces, but they also supported the killing of the men on the USS Liberty, to show you how many rats and traitors there are in this country from the top down, especially at the top. I know I keep saying this, but you got to get that through your head. Your problem is not so much on the street as at the top. Well, I see they had a 6-day war, 50-year retrospective gathering, the successful April Symposium, which ADL co-presented with the LBJ Presidential Library, and the 92Y is available on demand from ADL. Well, it's no wonder they had it in the LBJ Presidential Library, because he's the son of a bitch that called the planes back from protecting the men on the USS Liberty. LBJ said, I wouldn't risk upsetting the Israelis over a few U.S. Navy personnel. How much play did that get? Boys and girls, it's not that you're being treasonous to this United States. It's the United States central government and the people behind it are treasonous to you, and you have every reason in the world to rebel against it. Well, let's take a little look at the Middle East again. With astounding precision, Donald Trump zeroed in on the worst possible Middle East policy option in his recent trip to Saudi Arabia and made it his own. He rebuffed the efforts of Iran's newly elected moderate government to open up communications with the West and instead deepened America's alliances with discrepant autocratic regimes across the Persian Gulf. Turning up his nose at Iran, a rising young power, he embraced Saudi Arabia, which is plainly on its last legs. It was a remarkable display, rather like visiting a butcher shop and passing out a fresh steak for one that's rancid and smelly and buzzing with flies. Of course, in Saudi Arabia, you know, they're cutting the heads off of people about 3 a day. Saudi Arabia is not just any tired dictatorship with an abysmal human rights record, but one of the most spectacularly dysfunctional societies in history. It takes in $500 million a day in oil revenue, yet is so prolificate that it could run out of money in half a decade. It sits atop 18% of the world's proven oil reserves, yet is so wasteful that at current rates it will become a net importer of oil by the year 2030. Interesting, huh? Its king travels with a 1,000-person retinue wherever he goes, while his son, Deputy Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, plunked down $550 million not long ago when a 440-foot yacht caught his eye in the south of France. Yet this pair of royal kleptocrats dares to preach austerity at a time when as much as 25% of the population lives on less than $17 a day in the trice-strewn third world slums. Similarly, Saudi Arabia's appetite for high-tech weaponry is such that in 2015 it became the largest arms importer in the world. Yet its military is so inept that it is unable to subdue a ragtag Houthi rebels in neighboring Yemen or even stop them from raiding deep into Saudi territory and launching regular missile attacks. The kingdom accuses Iran of sectarianism, yet bans all religions other than Islam, arrests Christians for the crime of praying and possessing Bibles, equates atheism with terrorism, and has imposed a state of siege on Shiite Muslims in its own eastern province. Although a bit restrained of late, its religious police are notorious for roaming the shopping malls and striking out with canes at anyone violating Sharia law. As the English novelist Hilary Mantel of Wolf Hall fame recalled of the 4 years she spent in the kingdom with her geologist husband, it was impossible to know what might arouse their ire. It might be the flashing of denim legs of a Filipina girl revealed for a second beneath an object gone adrift, or it might be a plate glass shop front of a business that, as the evening prayer call spiraled through the damp, air-conditioned halls, had failed to slam down its metal shutters fast enough. What were the rules? No one knew. Saudi Arabia also denounced terrorism as at every turn, even though it's funding groups like Al-Qaeda and ISIS, also known as ISIL and Islamic State, is an open secret. In 2009, then Secretary of State Hillary Clinton complained in a diplomatic memo made public by WikiLeaks that donors to Saudi Arabia constitute the most significant source of funding to the Sunni terrorist groups worldwide. You want to send your kids over there to fight? Huh. In September 2014, she observed that Qatar and Saudi Arabia are providing clandestine financial logistics support for ISIL and other radical Sunni groups in the region. A few days later, Vice President Joe Biden told a Harvard audience that the Saudis, the Emirates, and so on, were so determined to take down the Syrian President Bashar Assad and essentially have a proxy Sunni-Shia war that they poured hundreds of millions of dollars and tens of thousands of tons of military equipment into anyone who would fight against Assad, except the people who were supplied were all Nusra and Al-Qaeda and the extremist elements of the jihadis coming from other parts of the world. See how the white working class are bamboozled all the time? Rather than fighting ISIS and Al-Qaeda, the Saudis give them money so they can wage jihad on religious minorities, yet this is the country that Trump now calls upon to drive out the terrorists and extremists, which is as ludicrous as relying on the KKK to drive out racism. It's also the country that he hopes will serve as a cornerstone of the Arab NATO so that he can sell it more jet fighters and Black Hawk helicopters. But the Saudi military is already top-heavy with such gear, while at the same time too short of infantry, that it relies on ill-trained Sudanese mercenaries, scores of whom are reportedly killed in a recent battle in the Red Sea province of Midji in Yemen's north. This is not surprising, since no Saudi in his right mind wants to serve as a foot soldier so that the deputy crown prince can buy another yacht. But more such purchases will only add to the military imbalance while adding more fuel to the broader Middle East conflagration. So how long will this god-awful marriage come about? Is it all Trump's fault, or have others contributed to the mess? The answer, of course, is the latter. Every president since Franklin Roosevelt has contributed to the catastrophe. Roosevelt declared Saudi Arabia a U.S. protectorate, while Dwight David Eisenhower got it into his head that a corrupt desert monarchy would somehow be useful in the fight against communism. Worried that it might come under Soviet influence, Jimmy Carter commenced a military buildup in the Persian Gulf that, according to the 2009 Princeton University study, has now surpassed the 10 trillion mark. I'll tell you who was around all those presidents that made those decisions. You know who. It's the Jew. And crazy Christians, too. Ronald Reagan relied on the Saudis to finance arms to the Nicaraguan Contras, which made him a war criminal too, and to Jonas Savimbi's pro-apartheid guerrillas in Angola. George H.W. Bush launched a major war to save the Saudis from the evil Saddam Hussein. George W. Bush and Barack Obama covered up the Saudi role in 9/11. While Obama and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton encouraged them and other Gulf monarchies to fund anti-government rebels in Libya and Syria, along with the Arab Spring. Both Libya and Syria fell in ruin as a consequence, as hundreds of millions of dollars flowed to pro-Al-Qaeda forces and the flames of Wahhabist terrorism spread ever widely. This does not benefit the broad white race at all. This only benefits a few plutocrats, kleptocrats at the top. Politicians, bankers, and their ilk. Remember that. Your enemy is not in the streets as much, nearly as much as it is at the top. Indeed, Donald Trump for a while seemed to augur something different. Well, I knew he wouldn't. I knew he wouldn't last. I told a lot of people he wouldn't last, even though some of the things he said sounded real good. But what? How many of them has he backed up and gone through with? Rather than praising the kingdom, he denounced it in 2011 as the world's biggest funder of terrorism and asserted, not inaccurately, that it was using our petrodollars, our very own money, to fund the terrorists and seek to destroy our people while the Saudis rely on us to protect them. Once on the campaign trail, he upped the ante by declaring that the Saudis blew up the World Trade Center and threatened to block their oil if they didn't do more to fight ISIS. Even more, but now he's turned 180 degrees. Even more disconcertingly, at least to Washington's endlessly bellicose foreign policy establishment, especially being totally anti-Russian, trying to cause problems between the United States and Russia. Trump dismissed the cherished U.S.-Saudi neoconservative goal of overthrowing Syria's Bashar al-Assad, arguing that the U.S. should concentrate on fighting ISIS instead. "I don't like ISIS Assad at all," Trump declared in his second presidential debate with Hillary Clinton, "but Assad is killing ISIS, Russia is killing ISIS, and Iran is killing ISIS. If killing ISIS was the main goal, then it followed that checking the power of the other three could be safely put off to another day." Well, just remember one thing, Mr. Trump. This government created ISIS. Prioritizing in this way made a modicum of sense, but it went counter to the official Washington self-serving orthodoxy, plutocrats, kleptocrats, and so forth, that Assad was somehow in league with the terrorists and that weakened one would undermine the other. Trump's "Assad is killing ISIS" line thus triggered a firestorm of protests from those in the know. Clinton shook her head sadly at Trump's naivete, while the mainstream U.S. media agreed that Trump didn't know what he was talking about. CNN, a division of Time Warner, said the claim was false because there had been no visible effort by Assad regime to go after ISIS. The Huffington Post, owned by Verizon Communications, wrote that Syria's prime focus was not to go after ISIS but to wipe out less radical Syrian rebel groups that posed a larger challenge to Assad, because they could be popular, internationally accepted, an alternative to him. In other words, although it might look to an objective observer that Assad was fighting ISIS, the Washington groupthink held that he really wasn't. He was somehow on ISIS' side, or so much mainstream outlets assured us. But it was nonsense that IHS Markit, a London analytics firm with extensive aerospace and defense experience, made it in a subsequent report beginning in April 2016. Its study of actual field conditions in Syria found that the government forces engaged Islamic State in battle 2.5 times as often as U.S. backed forces did. Damascus, for all its faults, was the one doing the heavy lifting, not the United States and its allies. And probably Israel was sitting there laughing and jumping up and down on the sidelines as Syria got weakened, Assad got weaker. Any further reduction in the capability of Syria's already overstretched forces, IHS Markit observed, would reduce their ability to prevent the Islamic State from pushing out of the desert into the more heavily populated western Syria, threatening cities like Homs and Damascus. Added a middle East analyst named Colum Strack, quote, "It is an inconvenient reality that U.S. actions taken to weaken the Syrian government will inadvertently benefit the Islamic State and other jihadist groups." And of course, now you know they're all, now they're invading the Philippines, too. And I wonder what this government and the State Department are going to do to aid in that invasion. I'm telling you, boys and girls, our enemies are right here. They're not anyplace else. Overthrowing Assad, in other words, means clearing a path for ISIS straight through to the presidential palace. This reality is obvious, yet it is a reality that official Washington prefers to ignore so it can continue selling Saudi Arabia more military goods, because all they care about is profits from the corporations and this rat outfit like Lockheed and so forth that has been screwing the U.S. taxpayers ever since before the First World War. As a result, Democrats, neocons, and liberal media opened up with a rhetorical artillery barrage when it became apparent that America had someone in the White House who might think differently. Trump, they cried, was a Siberian candidate. He was a Kremlin stooge. The fact that Trump questioned whether overthrowing Assad should be the first priority of the U.S. strategy in Syria was proof that he was in league with Vladimir Putin. Reeling from the onslaught, Trump began to realize that he was in a no-win situation, just as Obama had 8 years earlier when he gave Hillary Clinton and her neocon allies control of the State Department. Bucking Washington's foreign policy establishment, aka the Blob, was a losing proposition. The neocons were too powerful. Resistance was pointless. So Trump surrendered to the truisms of official Washington's foreign policy elite regarding the Middle East conflicts. Saudi Arabia and its allies, good. Russia and Syria and Iran, bad. Shoring up his right flank, Trump brought on board standard issue hawks like Secretary of Defense James Mad Dog Mattis. He don't look like much of a mad dog to me. And National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster, he launched a raid inside Yemen and bombed a Syrian military base, earning rave reviews from the press when in fact they did hardly any damage, killed hardly anybody. He invited Saudi Defense Minister Mohammed bin Salman. Salman's always been a Jewish name from what I remember, to a lavish White House lunch and then flew to Riyadh to cozy up with his dad, Daddy King Salman. What a reprobate he is. Washington officialdom was pleased, so was Israel. I'd like to see U.S. Special Forces parachute into that capital of Saudi Arabia and eliminate that entire Saud family. Trump's discordant comments on the campaign trail, maybe we can get Putin to do that. He's got more balls than all those guys. Trump's discordant comments on the campaign trail were forgotten as U.S.-Saudi relations settled back into the well-worn groove. The upshot was a record $110 billion arms deal, a sword dance, ritualistic denunciation of terrorists, Saudi speak for anyone opposed to the royal family, and a good deal of incendiary rhetoric aimed at Tehran. The big picture now is whether all this tough talk leads to something more substantial. If so, two flashpoints bear watching. One is the Red Sea port of Hodeidah, Yemen's chief entry point for humanitarian aid, and according to the Saudis, for Iranian military aid to the Hutus. For months, the kingdom has been pushing for an all-out effort to wrest the port away from the Hutu control. And the great danger is now that Trump, swept along by all this rhetoric, will go along with it. But a frontal assault on a city with more than 300,000 is no easy matter. To the contrary, it would be a major undertaking requiring not only U.S. air and naval support, but probably U.S. ground troops also. Here we go. More dead white people. More dead white soldiers. More dead poor people. As the right-wing Jamestown Foundation noted, Even with U.S. assistance, the invasion will be costly and ineffective. The terrain to the east of Hodeidah is comprised of some of the most forbidding mountains terrain in the world. The mountains, caves, and deep canyons are ideal for guerrilla warfare. There you go. That would wear down even the finest and best disciplined military. The most capable units of what was the Yemeni army and the Hutus themselves would inflict heavy losses on those forces that try to take Hodeidah, and then, if necessary, move up into the mountains. There you go. Good old guerrilla fighting. It's hard to imagine even Trump blundering into such a trap. I wouldn't. This is why the second flashpoint is even more worrisome, located 1,800 miles to the north near the desert town of Al-Tanf, is where the Baghdad-Damascus Highway, a crucial supply route, crosses into Syria from Iraq. It is also where the U.S. jets struck a pro-Syrian government convoy on May 18th as it neared a U.S.-British military outpost. It is an area where, on all sides, the Syrian army, Iraqi Shiite militias, Iranian-backed forces, plus U.S., U.K., and even Norwegian troops are now beefing up their forces, with Trump's Arab NATO vowing to contribute 34,000 troops to struggle against the now ISIS and Iran. The question is whether the U.S. and the Saudis will push matters to the brink by attempting to sever a key Syrian supply link to the outside world. If so, the upshot could well be a firefight that triggers a wider war. Oh, they love that. That will make the neocons and their Saudi allies very happy and no doubt please Israel, Prime Minister Benjamin Nitwit as well. But it will scare the hell out of everybody else. And that Nitwit better be careful. He had better be careful, because if this shit breaks really loose, and Iran breaks really loose, it's going to be Katie to bar the door shut. There's a man under the bed. And that's it from Terrible Tommy. That's my take on the thing, from another very intelligent person who actually wrote this. This is why, in most cases, I support Consortium News. That's consortiumnews.com. They seem to be more on the ball than almost anybody else. That's it for Tuesday from Terrible Tommy here in Lone Wolf Radio, and I'll be back tomorrow on Wotan's Day, David Lane's favorite day. And just to remind you, if you thought Trump was going to be your great white daddy, you've got a terrible thing coming. He is not. He's totally gone neocon.
Gordon Call was right when he made his famous stand. Heaven knows there was a man who fought the righteous fight, till the wrong arm of the law gunned him down in Arkansas. He would not pay one dime of tribute to the IRS, and for his disobedience they planned his fiery death. And now all is fair in love and war. Christian blood has been shed before, and though these tents of flesh may fail, the gates of hell shall never prevail. Because he gave his life for me, I shall not fear adversity, and we shall all meet at heaven's door. 'Cause all is fair in love and war. On a North Dakota road, February 83, that's when the war began, where two federal marshals died for the sake of tyranny. They both would underestimate the courage of one man who only shot in self-defense to save door, 'cause all is fair in love, in love and war. When all was said and done, and the verdict's handed down, someone had to take the fall, and it was Gordon's son, who was wounded in the fray. Please won't you pray for your recall, who now must waste his life away inside some stinking jail. Please pray the Lord might set him free, through faith we shall prevail. They say all is fair in love and war, Christian blood has been shed before, and though these tents of flesh may fail, the gates of hell shall never prevail. Because he gave his life for me, I shall not fear adversity, and we shall all meet at heaven's door, 'cause all is fair in love, in love and war.
Well, Carl, I love your singing, but all that faith and stuff, forget faith. Faith is not going to win anything. Blood, sweat, and tears, and enemy being dead is what wins the day, not faith. No war has ever been won by abstract faith. Only blood, sweat, and tears. Willingness to stretch it out for decades and decades and decades if you have to. It's not going to be won in a day or a week.